Welcome all our listeners to the Information Nation, brought to you by the Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management, Division of Fish and Wildlife Hunter Education Program. I'm the host today. My name is Scott Travers, and I'm the Hunter Education Coordinator for the state of Rhode Island. With me, I have Brandon Elliman, my technical assistant, who will be doing all our production work today. We're coming to you, recording from the Outdoor Education Office, located in the Arcadia Management Area in Exeter, Rhode Island. And as always, our focus is on hunting, hunter education, fishing, and aquatic education, and all things wildlife outreach related in the state of Rhode Island. In this episode, we're going to be talking with Rhode Island Division of Fish and Wildlife's fisheries biologist, Corey Pelletier. So welcome, Corey.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Great. It's great to have you. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I was born and raised just over the border in Connecticut. Grew up on the eastern side of Connecticut, venturing over into Rhode Island here and there. I got my bachelor's degree in environmental science in eastern Connecticut, and happy to be working here in Rhode Island.
Gotcha, fantastic. So where did you go to college in eastern Connecticut?
So I went to Eastern Connecticut State University, actually I'm pursuing a master's degree right now at the University of Rhode Island. While working full-time as a biologist.
Well, that's awesome. So that must take a lot of your time going back to school for that master's degree as well as working full-time.
Absolutely. A lot of late nights after coming home from the office, but it'll pay off in the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit about the fish hatcheries in Rhode Island?
Sure. So in the state of Rhode Island here, we have four fish hatcheries, and predominantly raise trout at all four hatcheries. So they range in scale as to how many fish are produced each year at each hatchery. But we mainly raise salmonids so at each of our hatcheries. So brook trout, brown trout, rainbow trout, as well as a few other variations. So the golden trout is a variation of the rainbow trout. Tiger trout is a hybrid between brook trout and brown trout. So we raise those depending on the year, depends on how many of those we have available. And then we've more recently been raising landlocked Atlantic salmon to stock out into our freshwaters. So we stock those out into some ponds and lakes across the state of Rhode Island.
Gotcha. So first of all, let me ask you a little bit about those tiger trout. When are we going to be seeing those?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe there's a good stock of them at the hatchery right now. They spawn them in the fall. So, you know, a year and a half, they should be ready to go, which I believe that was year and a half ago, so I think we should be stocking some out this season.
Gotcha. So this season, that's really fantastic news. And how about that landlocked salmon? When do you think those might be coming out?
Those will definitely be stocked out at some point this year. We've got some gorgeous brood stock that they're spawning at the hatchery from a few years ago. So the salmon are looking very good, and you can expect to see those come out into some of our fresh waters sometime this year.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. I know a lot of people are going to be happy to see that.
Absolutely. They're an exciting exciting fish to target. Unique to here. We don't have any returning migratory salmon anymore, unfortunately, but this program gives anglers a unique opportunity to target those fish.
Cool. So let me ask, what is your role as the fisheries biologist? What do you do?
Sure, good question. Do a whole range of duties. So one of the projects I spend a lot of time on is habitat conservation and research associated with that. So this is particularly targeting species of greatest conservation need in the state. So back in 2015, Rhode Island rolled out their wildlife action plan, which identified species in need of conservation in need of further work to in order to sustain their populations into the future. So wild brook trout is one example of that. It's our only cold water specific native species in the state. So I spend a lot of time collecting data and working to implement management practices to protect and support these species throughout the state.
Gotcha. And do you have any groups or organizations that you work with in furthering those efforts?
We do. Quite a bit of groups. Trout Unlimited is one of the popular groups that I work with. They're all about, you know, supporting fishing opportunities in the state. And they're also, one of their missions is to, you know, protect wild brook trout. So we work very closely on a range of projects and data collection ventures. So yeah, they've been a great partner, as well as a number of other watershed groups that also work to, you know, improve habitat in the state and protect our native species.
Cool, that's excellent to hear. So I hear these terms thrown out, you know, quite a bit. What's the difference between wild trout and native trout?
Great question, Scott. So these terms are, like you said, thrown about quite a bit and often used interchangeably, while they do not mean quite the same thing. A wild trout is something that's self-sustaining, and they support their own populations in a region, and versus a native trout, which is endemic to that region. So they originated in this region, whereas as opposed to a wild trout, which is often human induced or introduced, I should say, to the area. So a great example of this is our three species of trout that I mentioned before: rainbow, brook, and brown trout. Brook trout are our only native species in Rhode Island, whereas brown trout and rainbow trout are both introduced. And actually, I'd like to step back there, because we do not have any wild brown or rainbow trout in the state. But if you look next door in Connecticut, they have a slightly differing program where they introduce juvenile brown trout and rainbow trout into their waters, which have become self-sustaining. So that would be considered a wild fish, as opposed to brook trout, which are native to this region. So that's kind of the big difference. And if you take brook trout and you look at it from a Western perspective, in the Western U.S., they're wild to the Western U.S., but they're not native to the Western U.S. So they were introduced at some point in history, and their populations continue to support themselves, which is sometimes a problem there because they outcompete other native fish species.
Right. Well, it's really interesting. So what are some of the prominent impacts to native fish, such as the brook trout, in Rhode Island?
Sure. So there's a whole suite of issues that impact their habitat and their populations. One of the biggest changes we see now is climate change, and that's very coarse. There's many different implications or impacts to our native species through climate change, some of which are warming waters, change in weather patterns, so more storms, more intense storms, which change flow regimes in our watersheds, in our rivers and streams. So we're starting to see, or we have seen, impacts in the past and continuing, significantly with warming water temperatures. But some other issues we see are fragmentation of systems or rivers and streams, which is caused through historic building of dams, as well as road stream crossings, so where we put culverts to create road passage for vehicles. Often those can become barriers through erosion of the downstream side and what creating what we call a perched culvert. So this blocks passage for aquatic species to continue upstream, to migrate upstream, just like dams do. So this is a problem for population persistence because these animals, these aquatic species, cannot move in order to survive, whether they're trying to avoid certain water temperatures or avoid certain conditions or even access prime spawning habitats. So when we have these barriers in place, it limits their ability really for survival and to complete certain life stages.
Gotcha. Now, do you have any specific locations or projects that you're working on at this time?
Right now, we're working on quite a bit of data collection, identifying some of the most low-hanging fruit, as we like to call them. So barriers that we can pull together a team, generate some funding for, and get some projects on the ground. So we're looking into those options right now. Got plenty of ideas. It's just a matter of the timing and getting all the right components together in order to get some projects on the ground. We've done a lot of work for diadromous species, so migratory species between salt and the freshwater, such as river herring and shad. Particularly in the Pawcatuck River system, a lot has been done in the way of dam removal to allow those fish species to migrate up to preferred spawning habitat. So we're looking to get some work done in the freshwater, specific to freshwater ecosystems and improving fish passage for specific to freshwater species. And then I just wanted to dive into a couple of the other common influences or impacts that we see to our native species here, and development is one of the bigger ones, as well as climate change and fragmentation, and sometimes these impacts go hand in hand. Impervious surfaces, so paving roadways, building large buildings, reducing the ability of rainwater to infiltrate into the soils, which creates runoff. So when you have areas of high impervious surface, you see a change in stream flows because you get flashier runoff. You get a lot of water that when it rains, you get a lot of water coming into the rivers at once, which is a problem.
So where you have things like buildings and a lot of asphalt going in, then you'd also probably have a lot of contaminants leaching into the water system as well, correct?
Absolutely. That's a good point you bring up. And the other thing is, again, going back to the temperature, midsummer, your asphalt, your impervious surfaces are extremely warm. So when you get a rainfall, it's instantly warming all that water. So not only do you have flashy runoff, a lot of water going into our streams and rivers at once, but it's also warmed by these surfaces. So brook trout populations are often found in areas with least impervious surface.
Gotcha. So let's kind of focus in a little bit on the wild brook trout in Rhode Island. And I know a lot of our listeners who happen to be fly fishermen will probably really be interested in this topic. So what's the status of our wild brook trout population in Rhode Island?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, they are considered a species of greatest conservation need in this state, as well as many of the eastern states that are part of their native range. With that being said, they are the sixth most common species that we find in the state. But going back into those impacts, such as climate change, development, fragmentation, we do see impacts to these populations. So a lot of the populations are limited in their ability to move
from one location to another.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So In speaking about wild brook trout in Rhode Island, can you tell us something about fishing for the wild brook trout?
Sure. So where you want to target wild brook trout are typically smaller streams. You find brook trout in the coldest, most pristine waters in the state and everywhere. During midsummer, you're not really going to target wild brook trout in large rivers that have dams and impoundments, as those typically help to warm that water further, increase water temperature. So you're not going to find them there. You want to look in nice, clean, cold waters. So for example, many anglers and listeners here are probably familiar with the Wood River watershed. So even the Wood River itself contains wild brook trout as well as many tributaries. So, and then a lot of people target wild brook trout with fly equipment, also with spinning gear. Something as simple as a worm is one of the best ways to catch wild brook trout, as well as any other trout. And then flies, sometimes they key in specifically on certain flies. And one thing I'd like to mention is the wild fish are much more skittish than any stock trout. So when you're walking along the banks, something as simple as peering over the edge might spook the fish you're trying to catch. So they're a little more tricky to catch than your their stocked cousins.
Gotcha. That's a great tip for all our anglers out there. So about how big do the wild brook trout get in Rhode Island?
So they're generally on the smaller size. I'd say the average adult brook trout is probably between 6 and 8 inches. And then on the larger side, you may see one here and there that get up to 12 inches or so. And that's a really nice, healthy fish for this area. And as a reference, our fish generally do not live for more than 3 years in this state. So a 3-year-old fish, you're going to find most likely between 10 and 12 inches. And a 1-year-old fish is most likely around the 6-inch mark.
Gotcha. So it sounds like there's a real lot of importance to habitat conservation for brook trout and other species as well. We talked about some of the programs you have been involved with. So what can other people do to get involved and kind of help you out with these conservation efforts?
Yeah, so we at the Division of Fish and Wildlife have some volunteer opportunities. And I work with some volunteers quite frequently on various projects. Going back to Trout Unlimited, I work with them quite a bit. They have a lot of volunteers that help out on certain projects. We collaborate on projects. So there's definitely plenty of opportunity for involvement and to be able to volunteer. One example from more recently, we have a collaborative project with Trout Unlimited called Trees for Trout, where we're collecting recycled Christmas trees after the holidays. And these are used to build conifer revetments in some streams and rivers in areas where we've identified as impaired. So what these do is you install them along the banks of the river in a tight pile, so to speak, and the revetment extends out towards the center of the river, which slows the flow of water on one side and pushes more water to the other side. And over time, these structures fill in with sediments, so sands and silts. And what that does is it confines the river channel and creates a deeper flow and kind of engages the natural riverine processes that are important for supporting habitat for our fish species.
Gotcha. That sounds like a great program, and it definitely makes use of something like a Christmas tree that ordinarily would just get, thrown away and go into a landfill somewhere. So you can definitely put it to good use. But I guess we would definitely want to stress to our listeners and to others out there that we don't want people just randomly taking Christmas trees and throwing them in the water somewhere. We'd want them to definitely get involved with this particular program so that they get placed properly, correct?
Absolutely. There's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes for habitat assessment, understanding the way rivers work and how the processes of sediment transport, and knowing where to put these features so that they're beneficial and not negatively impact the river and the movement of sediments, and also we ensure that they're constructed in a way that's going to provide habitat and successfully, help those river processes.
Fantastic. Cool. So switching gears a little bit, let me ask, there's a new regulation out now for the harvest size of trout. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So in 2020, we implemented a new harvest size limit for trout, or harvest size minimum, I should say. And so that regulation specifies that all trout under 8 inches must be released. So there's no harvest of trout under 8 inches. And really what that does is protect the wild brook trout. So in Rhode Island, as I mentioned earlier, opposed to other states, we stock larger sized trout into our waters. So you're very unlikely to find a trout smaller than 10, 11 inches that we've stocked into fresh waters, whereas most of our brook trout are smaller than 8 inches. And so what this regulation does is allows people to harvest almost all of the fish that we stock, but protects the wild fish. And on the chance that somebody does catch a nice sized wild trout, greater than 8 inches, they're allowed to keep that. So this makes sure that there's enough wild trout in the system to keep spawning and sustain the populations, while anglers can harvest, a greater than 8-inch sized trout to take home for the dinner table.
Cool, that's excellent. So, Corey, we had a question from one of our listeners that asks, what type of fishing do you like to do the most, and where do you go fishing? I don't know if you'll answer that second part.
I was going to say, the most common answer for that one is the water, right?
Yeah.
But I'm a big fisherman myself. It's hard to say, just pick one particular species that I target. I love fishing out of my kayak. I love fishing in the salt water. I do a lot of striped bass fishing. One of my favorite species to target is fluke or summer flounder. I love targeting them from the kayak. It's a blast, but ton of freshwater species. I love fishing for northern pike, for travel up to upstate New York, fish for steelhead and salmon, fish for freshwater bass, and occasionally I'll bring the fly rod out and target some wild brook trout.
Gotcha. Awesome.
But in terms of locations, I'll leave that vague. And say yeah, in both fresh and salt water.
Yeah, right. So if our listeners have any questions for you regarding fisheries or any of the conservation work you do, how can they reach out to you?
Sure. I'm available by email. My email is corey.pelletier@dem.ri.gov. If you didn't catch that, can look me up on the internet. You can find me on the DEM webpage.
Right, on the website, I'm sure.
Yeah, they have all of our emails on there for you to reach out if you have any questions.
Gotcha. So one thing we ask of all of our special guests that come onto our podcast is for one's funny story, for something that happened in the field, whether it's something that happened a while ago or something that just happened recently. So, Corey, do you have any funny stories for us of something that might have happened to you out in the field?
Oh, I do. The one that comes to mind is from when I first started for Rhode Island Fish and Wildlife. It was my first week as a fisheries biologist. My supervisor gave me and a coworker the task of going to kayak down a river. So super excited. First week of work, I was going to get to go kayaking. And he did mention to throw on a pair of hip boots just to be safe, you know. And I believe our task was to go check to make sure this section of river was passable for when the river herrings start coming up. So we did that. We went out, hopped in the kayaks, and we're paddling down a section of river that was filled with phragmites. So it was a narrow channel that went through a sort of a maze of phragmites, which was very cool. And it was a nice day. And as we get down further, we start encountering some blockages, some trees in the water. Pretty easy, you know, portage right over them. And then we get down to a point where the channel nearly disappears and it becomes a series of narrow, shallow, braided channels that required just pushing ourselves through. And meanwhile, there's branches hanging into the water that are covered in slime and in algae. And so every time you'd go under one, it would lift up and slap you with a whole glob of algae. So that's just the start. And at a point, we couldn't paddle anymore. There was no way. So we hop out of the kayaks in our hip boots and just go right to our waist in mud. And so now we're in the middle. We're hundreds of yards away from any open land. It's all wetland. And at this point, it just became miserable. I mean, we're going through spider webs, everything. And we had to muck our way out of this section of river, waist deep in mud, and, pretty warm day. And we ended up having to crawl out through somebody's backyard. We couldn't make it to the end of the reach of river. We were covered in mud, sweating, dragging our kayaks and all our other field equipment. And,
I can imagine that didn't smell too good either.
No, we might have said one or two bad things about our boss, but we took it back right afterwards. it wasn't exactly as he had remembered. So I guess that was important for us to go check on that.
Fair enough.
So that was a nice introduction to being a fisheries biologist.
Excellent. Well, I hope you have some excellent field staff now who can help you with that chore from now on.
Oh, I'll be delegating that one the next time.
Excellent. Well, Corey, do you have any other things that you want to add for our podcast episode this month?
Oh, I would just like to say that trout season's coming up soon. Spring's here. I think we're all excited about that after a long winter. I know I am. Looking forward to getting out on the water, getting out and doing some field work. And so, yeah, I would just encourage everybody to get out there, enjoy the fish that we stock, enjoy our natural resources in Rhode Island. We have some beautiful places where you can really get out there and not know that you're civilization nearby. So say take advantage of that, get out into our management areas, explore some rivers, get away from, where the crowds may congregate, especially in the time of COVID here. So just want to wish everybody a good spring and tight lines.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being here with us this month, Corey.
Thank you very much.
So don't forget to stay tuned to our next podcast episode when we'll be speaking with Rhode Island Division of Fish and Wildlife's Gabby DeMelon, the Technical Assistant for the Wildlife Outreach and Volunteer Programs Coordinator. She'll reveal what our biologists have discovered about coexisting with wildlife through their many interesting research projects, both past and present, and providing some helpful info on how to avoid conflicts with everything from bears to coyotes to woodchucks. We'll also have more questions from our listeners. And if you have any questions for our guest or any of our staff, feel free to email me at scott.travers@dem.ri.gov. So again, thank you to all our listeners. Please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll be talking to all of you soon. And we hope everyone gets a chance to head out to Rhode Island's wonderful outdoors and enjoys our public recreation areas.